Hello, listeners. This is Lee Price.
This is Will Ford from Football 365.
And you're listening, smartly, to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, although I would describe it as the Chelsea FC podcast.
It's in a pocket of space. Anderson came and didn't get there. Chance for Chelsea. Goal for Chelsea. Kai Havertz in the Champions League final. And Chelsea take the lead in Porto.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, your number one source for all things Chelsea. On this episode, we are breaking down Chelsea's midweek League Cup victory over Aston Villa as the Kepa redemption arc continues. We look ahead to Manchester City and break down the huge contract rumours surrounding our key defenders. Now, here are your hosts, all the way from the UK, Mikey Berth and Chris.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of At the Bridge Pod. It is the weekend, even though this is going out Friday, because I've said what I said on Twitter, but hear me out. The UK, we've gone completely mad for petrol. Some are saying it's this year's loo roll. I don't know. And that means it's time for your second dose of At the Bridge Pod goodness. Berth and Chris, how are my co-hosts today?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually. Glad it's the weekend. It's been a long, long week, but I'm glad I'm doing the pod. Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I normally really look forward to doing the pod, but tonight it's a bit of a rushed one. Out for the wife's birthday, so I can't look to it like I normally do.
For anyone who listens, this is Chris clearly looking for a move away from At the Bridge. Yeah,
there was rumours.
Quite clearly, definitely.
There was rumours after the Monday edition where he didn't appear. What was that? Was that a stance? Was he standing his ground, wanting those better terms? We can't comment. We refuse to comment.
We offered him a new contract. We offered him a new contract. He's stalling on it. Well, we just don't know at the moment.
Look, we're going to have a gentleman's agreement. We're going to sort this out Harry Kane style. Yeah. See, just one word. He's got his agent there. He's listening.
Yeah, his agent has told him to say nothing at all about it. Just about talk about it. Yeah.
Brilliant. Before we do hit the newsroom, it's time for another round of Who is That Former Blue? Their career path is as followed. It's Feyenoord, Excelsior on loan, Chelsea, Lille, Hertha Berlin, and he retired at Botafogo. So if anyone has their any clues listening, tweet us. That'd be we want to know if you got this one. Do you two guys have a clue yet, or are you?
I think I've got a name in mind. I don't know if it's right, but I'm going to stick with that name anyway.
I'm confident Chris is just going to go, yep, know him.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't.
Oh, I might, there we go.
It'll come to me as we go along, but not at the minute.
Oh, fair enough. Actually, I don't actually think he's retired yet. I'm just quickly Googling it.
I think I'm spot on. I know
he
is.
He's a free agent. Oh, I'm so sorry. He hasn't retired yet. He's a free agent, but he hasn't got a club yet. So, yeah. Anyway, with that, we're going to head straight into the newsroom and see what the latest is at Stamford Bridge. Well, it's that time again. It's time for a weekly roundup as we head to the elevator of news. Mason Mount, N'Golo Kante and Jorginho were in line to be rewarded with new Chelsea deals. Chelsea's efforts to agree a new deal with Antonio Rudiger have not gone so smoothly. Real Madrid are the leading contenders, they say, while Bayern Munich are also keeping tabs. Marcus Alonso said he's not going to take a knee before matches. Milan star has turned down the chance to represent France at the Olympics he did in order to resolve his future. Obviously, his loan move to the Bundesliga fell through at the last minute. Chelsea were ready to make a €100 million bid for the PSG defender Marquinhos during the summer window, but neither the player or the club wanted to go further. Andreas Christensen is looking like he has signed a new contract at Chelsea. The announcement's meant to be soon. Chelsea defender Rudiger, yep, that man again, has handed the club a huge boost, they're saying, regarding his contract negotiations as he's leaning towards staying in London. He told Sky that this will now be the most important decision of any of his professional career, and he hasn't spoken to any club yet other than Chelsea. And Chelsea could return with a bid for Jules Koundé in the January window, but they appear to be targeting Juventus defender Matthias De Ligt ahead of a big summer move. What's taken your interest there, guys? I have left out the Timo Werner thing. I only just saw that literally on my feed earlier about this. He cancelled a deal with Bayern or something, but yeah, go ahead.
I mean, the Rudiger thing, I think we've talked about it quite a lot.
Just keeps going on.
I mean, you look at how he performed against Tottenham and his goal and what it meant to him scoring that goal. You just love him. Like, he has become a proper cult figure at Stamford Bridge now. And I just think we are going to miss him so much and the team's going to miss him so much if he goes. So hopefully we get that sorted. And as for like Mount, Kante, Jorginho, potentially getting new contracts, I think is really, really deserved. I think all of them have proved the doubt was wrong. I think Mount, first season of Lampard, everyone was painting him the same brush, saying, oh, he's Lampard's son and this and that. Last year he got player of the season. It was fantastic. So he deserves something. Jorginho again, Sarri's son. You know, people were saying, without Sarri, he wouldn't be there. He's turned his game around, been unbelievable under Tuchel. I don't think anyone realised how good he is until he played under Tuchel, under a new manager, under a new system. He's been phenomenal, Jorginho has. And, you know, UEFA Men's Player of the Year, or whatever it is, really, really well deserved. And Kante, look, some of us on this podcast wanted to send him for 100 million. I'm not going to name names, but but look, Kante is Kante. Or for me, he's better than, he's higher up now in the Chelsea ranks than SCN and McAlady. For me, he's been unbelievable. Got a goal at the weekend, which is really good.
Oh, come on. It was a deflected goal.
It was a great goal. Really, really good celebration as well. And I just think, you know, all three of them really deserve something from the club because they all love to be at Chelsea, have shown that they're world-class talents. And I think we'll be a massive miss if any of those three were to leave Stamford Bridge.
Chris?
Yeah, I agree with what Berth said about those three deserving their contracts for the exact same reasons. I mean, if there's three players who aren't running their contracts down, who deserve new deals just on performances, it probably would be those three. The Rudiger situation, I think, to be fair, I think he deserves some credit for the way he's playing, despite all the contract sort of negotiations that are ongoing. The uncertainty over his future, sometimes it negatively affects players, but it doesn't seem to be having any sort of effect on Rudiger. He seems as committed to the club now as he would do if he had 2-3 years left on his deal. So I think he deserves some credit for that, for still playing with the same sort of passion and desire. Like, because we've seen it at other clubs, players who are getting towards the end of their contract and are not sure whether they're going to sign, going missing. The Matthias De Ligt thing, I think.
Sign him up. Shares my birthday. Sign him up.
It's the thing that caught my eye the most, I think, out of what you just said. I think he was so highly rated at Ajax, and the move to Juventus for numerous reasons hasn't worked out, but there's no doubt there's still a player in there and he's still young enough. And I honestly think he could be an unbelievable signing, especially under Thomas Tuchel, who has proved now numerous times that he knows how to get the best out of individual players. And I think for both Chelsea and for De Ligt, it would be a great move because it would really get his career back on track.
I mean, he scored in the midweek win over Spezia, so he's doing all right at the other end of the net. The Timo Werner thing, I did see it said that he signed a pre-contract agreement with Bayern in 2019, and then he insisted the deal was cancelled after learning he wasn't wanted by the senior Bayern figures. Two things out of that is, I'm surprised that Bayern seem a very well-structured, well-run club. If they didn't want a player, why would they even start to agree a deal with, unless it's that whole just hoover up all the talent from the Bundesliga again? And then the second thing was, I was just like, how do you legally get out of a signed agreement? I'm really interested. That's not me being like Sarky. I genuinely would like to know how he got out of that agreement.
Yeah, it's very interesting, actually. I'd never heard that before. But you just seem to wonder, like, if Timo had gone to Bayern Munich, how his form would have been. Would it have been the same as it is at Chelsea? Would he have carried on his form from Leipzig? It would have been an interesting move. And then who would we have got and stuff like that? So it's a strange one, really, but it's all sort of ifs and buts at the moment. But yeah, it's a very very weird story to come out of nowhere, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to head into our game review. I mean, the League Cup, it returned this week, and obviously Chelsea took on Aston Villa in the third round. 10 changes to the first team. It ended 1-1. Timo Werner scored, the man of the moment at the moment. He finally scored a goal. Good for him. It was really good to see that, actually. We went through on penalties after a huge performance from Kepa and a very tasty penalty from Reece James. How did you find that game, guys? Did you fall asleep?
I'm going to be honest, I couldn't actually watch the game, so I only watched the highlights. Chris, I think you watched the whole game, didn't you, if I'm not mistaken?
It indeed.
I'll let you take the floor on the first bit then.
Okay. First half was a poor game, to be honest. Both teams was feeling their way into it. Both teams made a lot of changes, and you could see that in the first half, that a few players who weren't quite up to speed, a few new partnerships on the pitch for both teams, and it just didn't really click. We started the second half brilliantly, real intensity. Whatever Tuchel said at half-time really worked. The first 10, 15 minutes of the second half, we was really good. And to be honest, really should have put the game to bed. It should have been 2 or 3. But as we know, without Lukaku, we do struggle to put games to bed. Really good header from Werner, who I actually think had a really good game. He seems to be playing with a lot more freedom now. The pressure of goal scoring has been taken off him by the signing of Lukaku. I think with a bit more backing in terms of minutes on the pitch, I think we could start to see the best of Timo now. I don't think he'll ever reach Leipzig levels again, if I'm honest. I think that was a lot down to the league that he was playing in. But I do think at the same time, he doesn't really get enough praise for the stuff he does do. It's just all criticism for what he's not like the Leipzig Werner. But I think we just have to accept now that he's not the Leipzig Werner anymore, but start focusing on the good things that he does. And his work rate is incredible. I know I said, I think it was last week or the week before, that Mason Mount gets a lot of praise for work rate, and then it comes a time when you have to just say that's a given. But I don't think Werner gets any credit for it at all from certain sections of the fan base, which I think is a bit unfair. His runs off the ball are really good. He creates a lot of space for other players. The main player who stood out to me in the game, though, was Loftus-Cheek. Played in a different role to probably where you would expect to see him. He played as part of the double six, and he was really good. He started the game a bit slow, but as the game went on, really good touches, driving through midfield, very Kovacic-esque, but good, solid all round. And I think he looks like he's got his confidence back. So I'm hoping that he can start getting some more minutes, because for me, he stood out in the game more than Saul did.
Yeah,
he might have stepped ahead of Saul in terms of the pecking order.
Yeah, I've got on my own notes, I put this competition, obviously it gives the fringe players a huge opportunity, and it kind of keeps a harmonious squad balance, because we've got a big squad, we're a top six side, you know, we're top two side probably, hopefully this season. But, you know, we're one of the big teams with a big squad, and you want to keep everyone happy. And based on the eyesight test, players like you said, Loftus-Cheek, they showed their ability. And he showed, to me anyway, that he could get rid of the opponent. And it was exactly like you said, Kovacic-esque. Reece James had a penalty that was many would call unstoppable. I don't know how he walks around with balls that big, because fair play to do what he did. He stepped up, winning penalty, and lovely. It's absolutely amazing. Another one, though, and this actually brings into a listener question. I'm going to mix it in. Ben Chilwell and Callum Hudson-Odoi, for me, they didn't have games to remember, which is unfortunate. And Jonathan Kidd, he did ask, should Ben Chilwell be resigned to a long time out of this team? Thoughts?
I mean, it's a difficult one. He doesn't look up to the pace of the game at the moment, which is strange, because when Tuchel said in the summer that because Chilwell obviously was England, we got to the final, and Alonso had like 5 weeks ahead of him, I thought, okay, fair enough. But then I thought more about it and thought, actually, Chilwell didn't play at all for England. I know he would have trained in that, but he didn't play at all, didn't get any minutes at all. So
it's
a strange one that he said that, because I feel like Chilwell would have been relatively up to speed with it. He would have had a good pre-season, still fit from the Euros, not too tired, hasn't played too many games. But ever since he came on the other day and I watched him, and he just seems a bit lacklustre, a bit like a yard off the pace. His passing's very safe. He's not driving at defenders. He's not making those runs like Alonso does. So it's a strange one, really, with Chilwell. I think at the moment, with Chilwell, it's difficult because he can't really get that momentum in a game, because Alonso's playing so, so well, and Alonso's not putting a foot wrong at the minute. So Chilwell just hasn't got... When he does get the chance to play at the moment, he has to put in a 10 out of 10 performance. Otherwise, he's just going to get dropped, because Alonso's just playing out of his skin. So it's a difficult one at the minute with Chilwell, but I'm sure he will get a chance, and he will eventually take over Alonso again.
I don't think he will. I think there's a huge risk he won't, because you could see how during the game played out, Thomas Tuchel was out of his seat and getting quite, I'd say, aggravated by Ben Chilwell, but for playing like the wrong pass. That's kind of what the eyesight test sort of said to me.
That's what I'm saying. Normally Chilwell is very, very good on the ball. He's never normally sloppy at passing. He's normally got a good crosser, good at passing, keeps the ball really, really well. That's the Chilwell I know of last season.
Yeah, 100%.
This season he hasn't been like that. And what Chilwell doesn't also give you is those runs, those late runs that Alonso does. He doesn't get the goals that Alonso does. True. And Alonso at the minute, his end product's really, really good. He's giving the ball really well. He's defending really well. And it's impossible to Chilwell to sort of outshine Alonso at the minute. So, I mean, yeah, he was a bit sloppy midweek, but even if he'd had, like, say, 7, 8 out of 10 game, I still don't think he'd have been ahead of Alonso in the pecking order.
Chris, thoughts on this?
I'm concerned about Chilwell. I wasn't concerned before. I thought that what Tuchel said made sense about the not being match fit. But then when Tuchel come out and questioned his mental state, I was really concerned then. And he looks to me like he's lost all his confidence. I think going to the Euros with England and not getting a single minute on the pitch, I think it's really affected his confidence. Last season, and for Leicester, really, we've all seen how he's a very positive player. Like Berth said, he drives with the ball. He's a good crosser. He's a good passer. There was a moment in the game which I thought summed up his lack of confidence. Loftus-Cheek had drove through midfield and dragged a couple of people in towards him. And he played the ball out to Chilwell on the left, perfectly waited for him to put it in first time. Werner was making the late run into the box. The space was there between the goalkeeper and the defenders. Chilwell last season slides that ball in. Mm-hmm. And he took a touch and turned round and passed the ball backwards. And I just thought, that's not a player who's playing with any confidence whatsoever. I think what Tuchel was on about in terms of the mental effect of what happened in the summer with England wasn't us losing the final. It was the fact that he went there and didn't get given a chance. And I am honestly concerned now about how he's going to get that confidence back. Because like you said, Berth, he ain't going to get in the team at the minute because Alonso's not doing anything wrong. And when you haven't got confidence and you can see someone else playing in your position and they're playing so well, it's just going to dishearten him even more.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I want to see him do well. I mean, you know, we paid a big fee and he's a top player, one of our best performers last season. And at the moment, you're starting to worry. But hopefully our worries will be put aside in the coming weeks, but we'll have to wait and see. I am going to go on Kepa. But first, I just want to say this. A lot of people are sort of kicking off, as they usually do on the social platforms. At the end of the day, whatever happens with this cup, it's not a priority, you know. We found out this week that winning the trophy last season only nets you about 100 grand, which is, that's literally kind of fuck all in terms of prize money nowadays, especially for a top six side. And if we end the season with just a League Cup and not a single fan is going to be shouting from the rooftops saying, what a successful season. It'll be, oh, have a mighty fall and all that sort of thing. So I wouldn't be too worried if we got knocked out or if we got through. It's good for the squad, obviously, because more fringe players will get game time. Everyone's happy. And it's potentially another trophy to add to our collection. Yeah, you know. The final word, though, has to go to Kepa. I mean, Jonathan Kidd, again, he asked if he's back to his best. For me, I'll bring you two into this, but for me, he may never show that he's worth that world record fee for a keeper. But right now, he's shown he has the talent and he can showcase it when we need him and when we call upon him. You know, this is another win in a penalty shootout. He now has the most penalty shootout saves in the history of Chelsea, moving clear of Cech. And solid performance. And he's another player I'd argue strongly that he's taken a huge turnaround under Tuchel. What were your thoughts on Kepa and his redemption arc, I'd say?
Yeah, I mean, he's ever since Tuchel's come in, he's not really ever made one mistake that I can think of. I think he generally must have had no confidence at all under Lampard because it just seemed like anything he was doing wasn't going for him. His kicking was erratic. He wouldn't come for crosses. He had paper wrists, so he couldn't save anything.
The ball hit his face and went in.
Yeah, I mean, he actually looks like he has bulked up as well, though, under Tuchel. He looks like he's got broader shoulders now, and he looks more commanding in the box. Obviously, his penalty saves have been fantastic, but, you know, he seems more confident on the ball again. You know, his saves are really strong. He's powering it away from goal. He does just seem like a more confident, back-to-normal Kepa. I'm not saying, you know, claim ahead of Edouard Mendy, because I think Edouard Mendy is one of the world-class keepers in the world at the moment. So I don't think you should play ahead of him. But, you know, it means that £72 million now is slowly not
feels
looking.
Better.
Yeah, it feels better, doesn't it? So, look, he still might make a few mistakes here and there, but it's good to see him actually doing well in a good scenario, like saving, winning this game for us, and not only against Villa, but in the Super Cup final as well. So, you know, good for him, good for the team, and fair play to school for standing by him.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Cole, obviously Chelsea icon, he only said a couple of weeks ago that he felt that Kepa had bulked up over the summer, and I think it's kind of showing. He definitely seems different. What do you think, Chris?
You know what? I think Kepa actually has a really good mentality. If you go back, what is it, nearly 3 years now, maybe a bit more, the infamous substitution incident with Sarri.
Yeah.
I really had lost all respect for Kepa in that situation. And then with the way he was playing under Lampard especially, I thought he's not elite level at all. But since then, it seems like he's dealt with that, all that criticism that come his way, and he's stayed mentally strong. He's got an attitude. You've seen with the penalties, every penalty taker who'd come up, he was saying things to them. And that shows that he's quite a big character. And then I read a comment from, I think it was Trevor Chalobah, saying that he's really good around the group. He's always encouraging from the bench. He comes into training with a smile on his face every day, always does his best at training, regardless of, you know, what he's doing. I imagine that's being on the reserve team most of the time in training matches. I think he's starting to look like potentially the keeper that we brought. I agree with Berth. I don't think he should start ahead of Mendy, because Mendy's done nothing wrong. But I do think it also shows that sometimes a goalkeeper is only as good as the people in front of him. And under Lampard, I'd say, I think I seen a stat where the opposition was averaging about seven and a half shots on target per game.
Yeah.
Under Thomas Tuchel, it's less than two shots on target per game. So you can see why he was making mistakes. If you make a goalkeeper make 7-8 saves a game, they're more likely to make a mistake. Now he's making one or two saves a game, and it's easy to keep those clean sheets, and with that comes confidence. I think the biggest thing about Kepa that I think he's improved on is he's stopped making those silly mistakes. Every time the ball goes into him now, shots from distance, he's handling the ball better, he's not spilling things out, he's not positionally, I think he's improved a lot, which I think is something. I think I'm pretty sure I said that when we did a bit on Kepa, I think it was during this summer, last summer, that most of his problems was down to his poor positioning. So I think the coaches deserve a lot of credit for that, that he does seem a lot better now positionally, which is why his lack of height doesn't seem such a problem anymore. He's reaching those corners now because he's positioned better. I think over the next 12 months, I think he could really challenge Mendy for that number one spot. And I wouldn't write off Kepa as actually being Chelsea number one at some point, like we thought he was going to be when we signed him.
Yeah, it's top. I agree. I mean, I wrote down that the more I see the arc of redemption grow and develop, the more I think that Lampard's setup on the defending front ruined Kepa. You know, our defence back then, like you said, we were kind of overexposed, mistakes crept in. And then obviously his confidence just disintegrated, which is such a shame. And he's coming back, and it's great to see. With that, we're going to head straight to our Saturday lunchtime. You know, we've got a date with Man City. It's a quick preview is in order. How are we feeling heading into this huge, huge clash?
Confident, actually. It'll be interesting to see how we line up with, I believe, Mount and Kante are out, or Mount and Pulisic are out.
Mount and Pulisic are out, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think we'll probably go the same midfield that started the second half against Tottenham. I think Kante, Jorginho, Kovacic will play. I think he may go Werner and Lukaku up front. Which is something that I think would be really good against Man City, that high line. Because I think Werner's caused Man City a lot of problems in the past, and I think he will if he plays tomorrow. It'll be a tough game. Look, Man City is still an amazing side. I think now they haven't got that focal point in Aguero, I do think they'll be easier to defend against.
He used to terrorise our teams.
Yeah.
We all know that.
But look, they've still got world-class players. They've still got Grealish. They've still got Sterling, De Bruyne, Foden, Bernardo Silva, all sorts. They've got everything. Mahrez. So they're going to be dangerous. Going to be a threat. I think it'll be 2-1 to us, though.
I mean, at the moment, the injury bug has hit them. There's talk and who's in, who's out. At the moment, we know that John Stones, Aymeric Laporte, and Rodri have travelled with the squad, and Cancelo as well. Gundogan and Zinchenko didn't. So that sort of rules those two out. Who knows if Stones and Laporte will be able to, you know, go, but we shall see on that. Chris, what are your thoughts going into this huge, huge game?
I'm quite confident as well, actually. it's going to be a tough game. I do think Werner has to play against Man City. I think having that person who will exploit the space Man City leave in the channels is crucial. Mm. And if you've got Lukaku as the focal point, and Lukaku's also capable of running those channels, it will cause a problem for Man City and call into question how they set up to defend. Midfield battle is always key against Man City because that's where most of their talented players operate. I don't worry about us in midfield too much, though. I think if he goes with the Kante, Jorginho, Kovacic, I think that's a good, solid three, all capable of winning their individual battles in there. The only real problem I've got is I think it's going to be really important that Alonso and Reece James have good games, because Reece James got a lot of praise against Villa and he did do some good things, but he got caught out a lot defensively. He was playing a different role. He was playing right-sided centre-back, so I'll let him off a bit. If he's back at right wing-back, though, which I imagine he will be with Azpi coming back into the back three.
Yeah. I mean, he
can't get caught out and leave Azpi 1v1 against Grealish in that channel, because that will cause us a problem.
Yeah, I mean, Man City don't have a recognised forward, and it's shown why they need Harry Kane. I mean, they do have 11 goals in 5 league games, so that's kind of like, so what? Is it just me who finds it odd why they've chosen such a high-profile game for a Saturday lunchtime kickoff? I know there's Champions League next week, but maybe that's it. But I just found that so strange, especially how Sky Sports and BT Sport want to have the showpieces on like Saturday evening or a Sunday afternoon. What do you think?
I know you've played Man City before at 12:30 or whatever, but I don't really like the early kickoffs. I'm more of a 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Type of guy. Just gives it that bigger feel, that bigger atmosphere. But look, it'll be a great game to watch, I'm sure. I'm just hoping that we extend our lead at the top, shall we say.
Yeah. It's got to be Champions League related. That's the only thing I think of.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, yeah. We've got Juventus on the Wednesday. Have we got Juventus on Wednesday?
Yeah, big one, that one. Yeah. That will definitely be huge.
I actually think, though, it's probably down to the fact that BT only have one game per weekend. And it's the 12:30 Saturday lunchtime. So you're going
to
get some big...
I noticed that, to be fair. Really should notice that.
That's the only game they have, Premier League-wise, over a weekend. So you are going to get some big games played at 12:30 because they're not always going to have, you know, Watford-Burnley.
True that. Whatever you do, listeners, do not bet on that game. You know, never back the early kickoff. It's a British thing, we say. And I don't know, it's sort of... It just makes you cry if your Akers failed at, you know, 2 o'clock before the rest of the games have kicked off. Before we sign off, we're going to find out who the former Blue is. So at the start, I said he played for Feyenoord, Excelsior on loan, Chelsea, Lille, Hertha Berlin, and he didn't retire at Botafogo. He's a free agent, but his last club was Botafogo. Berth seems to have figured this one out. Chris, do you have any clues yet?
I think I figured it out. I thought of two players who went from Chelsea to Lille, and then... It was Hertha Berlin that sealed it for me.
I know Joe Cole went to Lille at some point.
Did you not know Joe Cole played for Hertha Berlin? And
that was back in the day, wasn't it? Go on, guys. Who is it?
Solomon Kalou.
It's the Champions League winner, yes. Solomon Kalou. He's 36 now. I thought, wow. Where did time go? If you got that, listeners, tweet us. We do like to hear. So with that, we've come to the end of another episode of At The Bridge Pod. As always, you can find us on Twitter if you do not already follow us. And you can find us by searching for at The Bridge Pod. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, then leaving us a 5-star review really helps us out. So till Monday, that is going to be us signing off.